Good morning, everyone. My name is Todd Cochran, and I want to welcome you to the Morning Tech Show. And I'm joined by Annie McCaskey up on top and Rob Greenlee down on bottom. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Hey. Good morning, Todd. And it's interesting that 1 year ago tomorrow, something changed. We'll talk about that.
Okay, something changed 1 year ago tomorrow. And I'm looking out the window, and the sun is just, I'm not kidding, it's just coming up. So it is just daybreak here in Honolulu. Of course, it's noon there where you're at, Andy, 9 o'clock Pacific with Rob. Rob, how's the quest for the vehicle?
Oh, my Nissan Leaf?
Yeah.
Actually, I have what appears to be some good news. I think that the Leaf is on the way. So I guess I'm the lucky recipient of one of the 1,500 that made it across the ocean just before the big earthquake.
Wow! So be taking delivery soon then, I assume?
In May. So I've got probably another 4 to 6 weeks before I actually get it.
Wow, that's great. Well, congratulations on that. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing your reports once you get a hold of it. But for those of you just checking the show out for the very first time, again, this is the Morning Tech Show. And if you've got comments on today's show, you can send them to geeknews@gmail.com. And you can also leave a message about the show at our voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. This show is part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Want to encourage you to get over to techpodcast.com. Check out all the great content over there. We've got 140 or so content creators, which I've been shaking up the, I guess for a better word, Andy, I've been shaking up the membership tree there a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got... Go ahead.
And one of the things I was doing this morning was taking a couple of my shows that I want to be submitting to Tech Podcast for possible consideration, making sure that I get my network IDs done.
Well, I've got about 20 shows in the penalty box right now, and basically all we're really asking is as part of the membership, we're making sure that the shows have a TPN banner on their website and that they're basically doing a quick shout out like I did. And you'd be amazed at the private emails I've got coming back to me. It's some of it has been quite for a better word, and this is, you're not seeing this on, because this is, I'm doing these via private emails. You'd be surprised by the responses I'm seeing.
Is it good or bad?
People are not happy.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. You would think that, we're giving them, they knew when they joined the website that it wasn't a directory. They knew there was requirements. They knew we'd get them on the Roku, Boxy, soon to be Looky TV. And we haven't announced that yet, but it's coming. Samsung IPTV and so forth. And yet they, well, I don't want to mention I'm part of the network. Well, okay, then you're not on the network anymore. thank you for being a member. And when you want to come back and play with the rest of the big boys and mention the show, mention that, I don't know what people's issues are, but I don't really want to get into this too deep, but it's an interesting dynamic. I don't get it. Any thoughts on, you're a charter member, any thoughts?
Well, I think that our intent from the very beginning was recognizing that the cross promotion and just an awareness, if people discover your content in some ways, then making your listeners or viewers aware of the fact that there are other shows that are similar subject matter or other shows that may be something that they like to explore. That's one of the main benefits of having the association with the Tech Podcast Network. And, in the beginning, we were, if you remember the Intel little tone jingle,
right.
We actually had a tone that we had that went into the podcast.
Yeah, I just don't I don't fully get it. But boy, oh boy, people are, for a better word, very unwilling to comply. And so the way I look at it is we may drop 20 or 25 shows on the network, but at least the remaining 125 or so will be team players. And so be it. It is what it is, I guess.
So Todd, is there any kind of clue, you know, via these emails, why they don't want to kind of cooperate with this?
Well, it boils down to that, one, I didn't know. Two, we're just being listed over here, okay. You know, and three, what mailing list? And, you know, we're not involved. We haven't heard, you know, and here we send them emails. We send, there's a mailing list they get subscribed to. And, you know, so it's been, you know, some guys are, please, I'll fix this right away. And, you know, I'll make sure, yes, I got Slack and yeah, I'll do that. And I put them back up on the site immediately. But it has been an interesting, it's the gamers mostly that are fighting it. Like the guys with the gaming shows, those seem to be the ones with the biggest complaints, and the guys with, I guess for a better word, what they consider more popular shows. So it is what it is. And I'm just, they can be part of Blueberry if they want. They don't, you know, they don't have those requirements, but we just have to move forward with it with TPN, especially. And I got some ideas and stuff that we're cooking for TPN that we want to do, and we want everyone on the same team. And without everybody on the same team, it doesn't work. Hey, see in the chat room, Podcast Pickles watching, and he says his daughter arrives in Hawaii today. I know his daughter and son-in-law are coming out to Hawaii to live, so I'll have the Podcast Pickle, part of the Podcast Pickle family here in Honolulu shortly, so that's pretty cool. So good morning. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into my tech stack here that I've got for you. It's been some speed tests been done recently on the, and I'm getting used to, first of all, I got to show you guys this. You guys are going to be like, oh my God, my new Surface came, Andy.
Oh.
Yeah, Andy knows what this looks like. Let me show this to you guys. Let's see here. Let me cue the right camera. You're not going to be, first of all, you're not going to be able to see the whole thing. Can you see that?
Oh, my goodness.
So from that's here.
Like, that's like twice as wide.
Oh, it's the original one would go right here to about here. But I'll be straight up honest. And my wife looked at that. And she goes, are you kidding me? Are you kidding? And I kind of looked at it and I said, are you kidding me? A couple of times myself. And so I played with it for about 4 hours. And I'm going to be very straight up with you. It's worth every penny. And part of it is because there's stuff I can do now that I couldn't do before. When I had to use a mouse over here, and it's right there. Everything is right there. And the virtual set stuff, you know, I can even bring in, let's see here, can I do it this way? Which would it, no, I don't have any virtual sets that will, well, I have this one will work. See, I can even bring in a virtual set right now. And have us use that while we're doing the show. And I could have never done that with the old Switch. But anyway, we've got us down here in the small section, but let's talk about this, this new announcement or these new tests that have come out talking about Verizon 4G TE blowing away Sprint's WiMAX in over 1,000 speed test. And essentially they went through and, of course, this is really easy to see for those that are watching on the net. Let me explode this a little bit, but it just shows a huge difference in average download speeds using a Thunderbolt LTE Toshiba laptop and LTE. They were doing average of 9 megs down, as compared on the same laptop with the EVO WiMAX from Sprint 1.57. Then you compare another area. They went to another location and they got 11.35 on an LTE Toshiba laptop, as compared to the WiMAX where they got 1.41 megs down. And then if you go to the third test area, they had the EVO WiMAX and the Toshiba at 1.7 down with 9.28 average megs down. So they're killing them.
Todd, let me just say one thing. Up to this point, 4G has just been a marketing gimmick. It really hasn't meant anything as far as speed. We're finally now with LTE getting to a point where 4G is actually what would be getting there to be considered true 4G connectivity. It's been a long time coming.
Well, and just looking at the upload speeds too, and of course, there's not a lot of people on LTE. You're dealing with the 4 megs up, 6 megs up, 5 megs up as compared to 0.4, 0.9, 0.6.
That's a huge difference.
Huge. That's not huge. That's
astronomical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I've got a Sprint card and I use it in 3G and quote unquote 4G mode. And when I am on 4G, I get faster than these guys. I get about double what I see out of 3G. So makes you want to run out and buy a Verizon LTE card, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, funny you should mention that, Todd. That's one of the things that's on my list for this weekend.
Oh, really? You're going to go pick one up?
Well, I'm the one that I'm interested in is the one that is actually the USB stick version that will be 3G/LTE. And I think price point's about $150. I had have been a Sprint customer 3G for a number of years, and I actually have a separate WiMAX USB dongle. The problem is that it was one of these little air cards that sticks up vertically.
Right.
Whacked one time, and so mechanically the thing's broken, and I can't get the attention of the Sprint people to give me a replacement or to let me continue on my existing 3G contract. They want to whip me into a new contract. Well, if I'm going to be signing up for another 2 years, because I'm way past contract time on the first card, if I'm going to sign up for another 2 years, I'm back in the market again. And I look at the Verizon package and say, why would you stay with Sprint?
Well, I'll be honest, the Verizon 3G, when you're back on a 3G connection, oops, let's bring this screen up. It's not as fast. I'm not happy. I've got a Verizon 3G card and it sucks from a comparison standpoint. So long as you're in an area that has the 4G, you're probably okay.
So I tell people this is a technical show. You know, you get all these technical terms.
Or, you know, if you're on LTE, so do you guys have LTE there in Elkhart?
You know, I don't know. I suspect South Bend would have LTE, you know, because of the 89 corridor.
Yeah, it's been, you know, they're still rolling it out. So Hawaii doesn't even have it yet. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're a pretty big marketplace. But, you know, my problem, too, is with the Sprint so-called 4G, is that I can be in the other side of town and I can walk from, or I can be from one table to the next and get service and not get service. It's like if there's a building in line of the tower, you know, it doesn't do well around obstacles, at least in my experience so far. Andy, you mentioned something at the beginning of the show we probably should have asked you about. You said a year and a day or something. What was that about?
My understanding is that, as hard as it is for us to believe, as of this date last year, you couldn't get one of these.
Oh, it's only been a year.
Think, to think that it's been just 1 year and the impact that that this device has had is just amazing.
It's true. So they didn't introduce the iPad on April Fool's Day, or did they? Did they? Is that when they introduced it last year, April 1st?
No, April 3rd, I think.
April 3rd. You know, and my wife has seen the new, of course, my wife's going everywhere with her iPad. She's seen the new commercial for the new one. She says, honey, and she's not one to want to upgrade stuff. And of course, she's living on hers. So she wants the new version. She wants me to upgrade her. So, and it's not very often that the missus ask you for something. So I guess I have to put my name on a waiting list to get one in 2 months or however long it's going to take. Rob?
You see what I pulled out here, Todd?
Oh, yes, you did. Your lens pens cleaning kit?
Yep.
Go ahead, Rob.
The Sidekick.
The 4G LTE speeds.
Oh, go ahead.
It's really, really phenomenal. As I look at this, it's more the upload speed is what's really dramatic. I mean, if I think about even my home Comcast connection, I don't get upload speeds in that range, which now I could probably pay extra and get that kind of speed. But on a typical Comcast connection, you typically don't get, 4 to 7 megs up. On your connection, and it really begs the question for me. I mean, that's a real opportunity to do video sharing and
your 5 gig limit
video
now.
Calls and a lot of how fundamentally different is our mobile experience going to be with these kind of speeds? And I think that's the question: is it going to be worth these kind of speeds? And then secondarily, the next question is, with all the tiered pricing for bandwidth, you could easily burn through your caps very, very quickly with these kind of speeds. And it just begs the question, what's the implications of these caps when a person has this kind of speed?
Well, I think as far as I know, the caps are still in place. I don't hear any bandwidth different, Andy, if you're any different, I think we're still at the 5 gig cap, aren't we, on these LTE connections?
Yeah. And obviously, it doesn't take too many movies or parts of movies to blow through that.
I guess the thing that I'm watching too is that, here in Honolulu, I got this email from my cable provider. Hey, we've doubled the speed in your area. Congratulations! And man, I was stoked. I went down and I'm like, sure. Oh man, I'm pulling 12 megs down. I'm sitting here dancing the gig, and then I watched the upload speed, and they didn't double the upload speed. So I called them. I said, you guys are doing false advertising on double the speed. Oh, no, sir. Your speed's been doubled. No, I see download speed's doubled, but the upload speed's still 1 meg. Or what's going on? And she didn't know she was kind of flabbergasted that I would call and complain about not enough upload speed. But I'm like, you're doing me no good. I said, you can have the 6 megs back. I need 2 megs upload. Oh, we don't offer that yet, sir. I'm like, well, you didn't double the speed then. You know, it's a two-way street today. And then we're not only just worried about the download speed. And, they give me the song and dance.
Yeah, it seems like that we're coming up on a bumpy road to our wondrous high-speed online experience here. I think it's not going to be as great as everybody has hoped for many years that we would get to this point. But with these caps, it's going to be a very expensive road. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's going to be very expensive and,
and profitable.
And profitable for the mobile providers and everyone else, because, they're licking their lamb chops over these, everyone using a lot of bandwidth. So anyway, I guess that's kind of what I wanted to talk about on LTE. So Andy, you're going to have to let me know how your experience goes with picking up an LTE Verizon card. Make sure you can do a 14-day return on that too, or whatever your lemon law or something like that.
I'm going to check on that. Yes, that's the other side of the coin there.
And you might actually get more bandwidth if you have on a business account too, instead of a personal. So that's just something to keep in mind, because I find that out with Sprint. Okay, let's, you know, I was too busy to think about April Fool's yesterday, but did you find any of the specific April Fool's jokes good, or did you laugh at any of them, or?
Todd, I was super busy and forgot to check. You know, Slash Todd usually has an excellent summary of the April Fools, and there are sites that aggregate these things as well. But just distracted by real world types of stuff.
Rob, how about you?
Really, the only one I really thought was good was the one that Google put out there for their new Google Motion.
Well, let's watch watch that video. Let me go ahead and bring the Google video up. This is the Gmail eliminates the need for keyboards, and I think you'll like this.
Hi, my name is Paul McDonald. I'm the product manager of Gmail. Over the past decade, advances like touchscreen technology have transformed the way we interact with personal electronics. However, when it comes to email, we still rely on outdated technologies like the keyboard and mouse. At Google, we've been thinking about how to solve this problem, and today I'm excited to share a new development with you. We call it Gmail Motion. Using your computer's camera and a spatial tracking algorithm, Gmail Motion interprets physical movement and turns it into actionable commands. For example, to open a message, make a motion as if you were opening an envelope. To reply, simply point backward with your thumb. To reply all, use both hands. To send a message, lick a stamp and place it down. We've been working with experts in motion technology and semiotics to develop a language of movements that replaces type entirely. The movements are designed to be intuitive, ergonomic, and easy to do.
Studies over the past 24 years have indicated that more than 80% of our total communication is body language. When you can incorporate a shake of the head, a gesture of some kind, you're making that communication far more effective.
Our bodies did not evolve to sit at a desk in a rigid position all day. And it is my feeling that Gmail Motion will free the regular user from the constraints that modern society and our interface with our machines have put on the human body.
We spent a long time perfecting Gmail Motion, and we're excited about the potential for it to help improve your email experience. For more information, visit gmail.com/motion.
You know, I just love the nerd. He looks like he's all strung out. Looks like he's drank like 10 Red Bulls. You know, his eyeballs are wide open.
I mean, it was all done total straight face. They were all so professional about it. I mean, if you look at that page, you scroll down that whole page, you can see all of the graphics that they've created to symbolize all emotions and all this stuff. I mean, somebody really spent some time producing that.
You know, licking the stamp and sending. I just, I laughed. I really did in the, you know, just that nerd that they had, any the thin blue tie. You know, in the you know, so I will admit that was probably the good one. I would say there was a lot of them though. And let me see if I can actually go ahead.
The Kinesthetics and Paralanguage Institute, I thought, added some class to what otherwise would have been an outright, you know, sleazy joke.
Did you see the little pun at the beginning? You know, they're talking about email and what was on the desk at the very beginning. Did you see that yellow envelope? The interdepartmental transfer. You know, you know how we used to send, what envelope, Andy?
Shotgun envelope.
Yeah, just, you know, where you put in stuff to send to different people. I haven't seen one of those in, 15 years or 20 years maybe. And it was right there on the desk. You know, he's writing an email. They're talking about the advances in email and how this is the way we communicate. And yet they had this. And I don't know. I just wonder how many people actually saw that in the video and laughed. You know, most probably people didn't even know what it is or what it looks like. That's how we used to. How to talk amongst each other in companies. So,
I you guys probably don't know this, but that's how Microsoft sends mail between all of its buildings and departments, is through those little, you know, those large folders that have the little string on them that you wrap around a to seal up.
Okay. I guess they don't don't trust email totally, huh?
Well, I mean, there's certain things like, you know, paper documents and things like that you can't send through email yet. I mean, unless you scan them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting to have some teammates that are age 25 or younger, because there are a lot of assumptions that some of us we'll say something or do something that just gets a total blank stare as far as you know, business practices or activities.
Yeah, it is curious. It really is. But anyway, it's April Fool's was April Fool's, and I think that there was a whole bunch. Starbucks did one, Hulu, Funny or Die had a whole bunch, Qualcomm. So, you know, all the major companies, we usually do one at Raw Voice, and this year we didn't. We just laid our heads down on the grindstone too much. And let me tell you guys just a little bit about, we're starting to make some announcements. We're going to start very early next week, and I guess I can talk about it here. I'm not going to name the name of the service, but we're going to launch at NAB a premium content service. And basically what's going to happen is it'll be integrated into the Roku. So it'll be video or audio on demand. You'll be able to sit in your living room and bring up this new channel that we're going to be launching and look through the media offerings. And it could be anything from educational, marketing, independent film creators, content creators, you name it, anything that is dealing with the premium content. And just click the little buy button and you'll be able to do video on demand, just like you do from your major television, your big television, and your hooked up to your cable service. So we've got a specific name for the service. I'm not going to reveal that yet. But that's what we're going to introduce at NAB. We want to get the word out early to those that matter, and we're pretty excited about bringing this system online.
So when you say premium, is that a paid content?
It's going to be, yeah. So people will be able to buy a one-off, just like you do now. If you're going to watch a movie and whatever the price that the content creator sets for that piece of content, whether it be $1.99, $3.99, $5.99, whatever it may be, you'll be able to pay for it once and watch it within a specific time period, just like you would on a standard video on demand type of service. Or second, we will have a subscription base. So if someone is providing serialized content and they want to provide a series of shows on a subscription basis, we'll do that, have that available as well. So there's going to be a variety of ways that people can have their content paid for, and or even big package deals. If they want the 10 pack, they can do a one-time charge and they get access to the 10 pack of content or whatever it may be. So we're excited about bringing that to really the Roku and leveling the playing field from a independent film creator and a content creator standpoint. Because there's really no platform out there right now that is basically taking care of that whole segment. And there will be an accompanying website, too, so that people will be able to go to the website and set that up. And but again, the cost is going to be completely set by the content creator. We're not going to set the price. They set it when they set up the account. And if they think their content's worth $50, they'll put $50 on it, and they'll see if they sell anything.
Hey, Todd, from a content creator's perspective, if you have, let's say, 10 episodes that are already produced, are you able to turn this on immediately?
If you want 10 pieces of content up on the portal that are tied to, yeah, you're basically, if you want to sell them as a package, you can sell them as a package. So it's basically we're going to allow you to mash it up. You know, when we first launch, there might not be all the options. But I'm pretty sure we'll be pretty close to having all, we've spent a lot of time rebuilding our commerce engine to support the activity in these types of either one-pay subscriptions or a single pays or a package deal. So basically, you're going to go into the interface and you're going to create your account. You're going to put your, you know, your content name, the description, pricing, and then you're going to attach the media that goes along with that. Now, one of the things that we're still a little bit working on is whether or not some folks aren't going to care about DRM. Some folks may. So we're going to have to see how that works out. We're pretty safe in the Roku and delivering the content through the Roku device that people aren't going to be able to just grab the content and go or share it somewhere in some peer-to-peer site. But, you know, we have to make a decision at some point whether or not we're going to wrap this in DRM. I really hate DRM myself, but I also understand that we may have some content creators, especially independent film guys, that won't want to put their stuff up unless it is wrapped in DRM. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. What does the viewer have to do? Do they have to put in a private channel number or something of that nature on the Roku?
It'll be a public channel. I met with the Roku folks last week when I was out in Silicon Valley. Spent some time with them talking about the service. And it'll be a public channel that will be available to be added to the lineup. Just like you add any channel right now to the Roku, you'll be able to go in and add the channel and then the content will be there. What we're going to be doing at NAB is we're going to be obviously describing the service and talking to content creators, and then we'll probably launch the actual website and service a couple of weeks after NAB. Now we'll probably have the framework up on the actual website that we're launching, but we probably will not have, we've been reaching out to a number of premium content creators. So our plan is to launch with, you know, some partners at the very beginning that have already been doing premium content.
So would this be only on the Roku experience currently, or are you looking to expand?
The first launch will be on the Roku, then we'll expand into the other devices. And I could foresee this becoming, since it's already built in, it'll probably be a built-in function on future channels. It's just the ability will be embedded. It may not be enabled, but we feel this is going to be a new revenue opportunity for us. We haven't set percentages yet. We're trying to get a feel what people think are comfortable. One of our competitors takes 40%. We think that's too high.
It's pretty high.
Yeah, it's really high. So
is there any thought around this kind of process for an RSS-based delivery system?
Well, it could be. It's going to be tied into our MyCast system. So when someone is authorized a piece of media, it goes into their account. So it'll go into their stack of available media that they'll have available, and that will be available via an RSS feed. So it could be fed to, you know, a mobile device. But again, it's the challenges that we're facing, and the thing that we're going to be looking at is whether or not these folks are going to be okay without this being wrapped in DRM. Because if it's not, and we deliver it via RSS feed and it's just another downloadable file without a license assigned to it, that's can be a challenge.
And adding that piece to it can be a little complex. You know, which DRM do you use? What's the playback capability, right?
Yeah, the DRM stuff is really not that bad from an implementation standpoint. It's just whether or not do we do it. And how many customers do we lose if we don't? And can we just turn it on, have it turned on and turned off? You know, can the person says, no, I don't want my stuff wrapped in DRM, turn that off. It is a definitely consideration, but there has to be some trade-off, we feel, with content creators. You know, the movie theaters and movie producers or movie companies have made it so hard, really, to take your media with you. We're trying to keep that barrier as low as possible. You can see the sun's coming up. I'm getting shine in the face. So we'll see how it does. You know,
that's a great announcement, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad to see that the industry is kind of, you know, and you're kind of, you, I mean, you tend to lead this stuff a little bit, that we're moving in that premium direction. I think it's the direction we need to go.
Hang on here. All right, had to put the shade up.
Okay,
so anyway, that didn't even really have that in the agenda today, but I thought since we were yakking, I'd talk a little bit about it. We'll be starting to make some blog posts early next week, so everyone else on here kind of got an early view, and we've got a cool name for it too. That was the hardest part, was finding a name, and especially finding one that was available. He said, "How about this?" And that's gone. And find this. No, it's gone. But we finally found one. Hey, over on, moving on here, on Business Insider, of course, Time Warner has this past week pissed off every C-SPAN, Fox, Comedy Central. They've upset all these guys with this launch of their iPad app, where you could, if you were a Time Warner customer in the continental U.S., not here in Hawaii, if you were in the lower 48 and you had Time Warner, you could take your iPad to any part of your house, as long as you were on your local network, and you could watch the television channels that you are subscribed to. Well, the lawyers have gotten involved, and Time Warner removed some of the channels, but a day after announcing it was getting rid of a bunch of channels from its streaming app, it announced it's adding 17 new channels. And so Time Warner is not backing off on this one, and I'm sure this one's going to be headed towards Lawsuit City. But as much as I don't care for the cable providers, I have to kind of applaud the folks at Time Warner for taking the initiative here. Any thoughts, guys?
Yeah, I'm just not sure what the difference is between what they're trying to do there, really, in the bigger picture things, and Slingbox. Is it, you know, it seems like it's a very similar type of, you know, experience.
Well, I think part of it, Rob, is that it's streamed. It's not converted, you know, because the stream box takes what you have coming in at you. So it's a personal choice that you're doing with the stream box. You're making the choice to connect to a device that you own, whereas they come in another way. Rob, they are saying your audio is a little low too, so let me bring you up on volume a little bit. And any thoughts on this?
Well, I think that it's interesting, the conflict between the interest of the content creator and that brand, for example, Comedy Central, and the struggle for control kind of in the middle with the people who are doing the transportation, and I think they're concerned about losing control of the end-to-end experience to deliver that viewer to that advertiser that's watching that particular piece of content.
Well, I definitely think that it's about control, but I'm just wondering, I think Time Warner's got a good argument, and I think they've got a good chance to win this, because Time Warner's paying for folks to get this content. Now, they're paying for those channels. You get them on your cable. They don't allow this app to work outside of the Time Warner network. You have to have a login with your username. So you're basically getting what you are subscribed to or not. And it's just being, it's delivered over the net, and really your TV kind of is too, to a certain extent. It doesn't come in the same way. But it is interesting that these companies are freaking out over this. I think the genie's out of the bottle. I don't know how they're going to, how they're going to be able to go the other way with this. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like that they're fighting over something they really shouldn't be fighting over. I'm not quite sure what.
Well, I don't see how that's different than one of your teenagers adding another television and tapping into the cable distribution that you physically have in the house.
Right. or you know, like it is in most areas. Now you got to go ahead, Rob. You know,
yeah, it's oftentimes, Andy, they charge a little extra for that, and that could be what they're trying to go after here.
Oh, for the number of drops inside of a house?
Yeah.
Or you have to buy another box to get all the channels that you're...
I guess that's because I've not had that situation as far as being on cable.
Well, I cut my cable, so I don't have to worry about it. That experiment's going pretty good. Now, on top of this, Hollywood has decided that they are going to allow premium video on demand. And you're going to get the pleasure of, instead of going to the movie theater and paying $10 a head and getting your $8 popcorn and your $16 soda, and then a $10 piece of candy, they're giving you the pleasure of now renting premium video on demands for $30 a pop. And they're going to be starting this soon. And this will be basically movie offerings that are available at the same time in the theater, but are not yet out on DVD. Time Warner, Sony, Comcast, and News Corp are all going to be rolling this out on DirecTV and on some of the cable markets soon. So $30, is that going to be enough to convince you to go grab that newest movie out?
Well, I think what's going on here, Todd, is that they, you know, a typical movie from the theatrical release to when it actually shows up, like at iTunes or Zune or, you know, one of these places where you can get it online is about 120 days typically. And so this deal actually cuts that to 60 days, which means that any movie that comes out in the theaters is going to show up in digital release, in a whole lot less time, right? And so a lot of the theater owners are all really upset about this because that gives them a shorter window of time to make their money on a movie before it starts being available on these online services. So that's what's really going on here. And I think also the piece that's a little exorbitant is the $30 price. I mean, I can go to a movie for, was it 10, 11 bucks per ticket right now. So, you know, there's not a lot of huge, you know, incentive for me to buy this movie at home for $10 more than what my wife and I could go see it in the movie theater. So I'm not, for a lot of families, it's not going to be a big incentive. But if you have a, you know, a larger family, I can see a cost benefit. If you're bringing three, four people to see a movie.
Hey, Rob, you're still a little bit down on volume. I've got it cranked as high as I can crank it here. If you can crank it on your end a little bit, it'd be great.
Sure.
So, you know, for me, you know, of course, with three kids, it's $50. Movies don't cost eight. I haven't paid $8 for a movie in 5 years. Everything here is 10 and 12 bucks a pop. So, you know, I'd love to be able to pay eight to go to a movie. So that's one of the reasons why I think the last movie we actually saw in the theater, oh boy, probably was like one of the Harry Potter series when they were first coming out. So that was, you know, years ago. I don't remember I've gone to a few movies here and there when I'm on travel, but it's been just me. So I don't know, $30 for a movie I really want to see maybe once a year. I don't know. Andy, do you guys do much video on demand?
It would be, and the answer is no. In fact, we did more with Apple TV here, you know, maybe a couple of years ago than we do right now. It would be very interesting to see the marketplace by age and then sliced by demographics as well. I think amongst certain age groups and certain demographics, the ability to do that may be of some value, you know, because their peers are seeing movies and for whatever reason, you know, they might not be able, but if you have babysitters and so forth involved, where it would become cost effective. But I think a part of it for other parts of the age spectrum, this is not an urgent matter, and paying that amount of money, you know, to view that movie at home is not going to be very attractive.
Did you say babysitters? They still have babysitters?
Well, if you have, I mean, if you've got a young family, the cost of two people going out for a movie, and then you figure in the babysitter and you know, these kinds of expenses, then that $30 or the $50 becomes more more realistic as a trade-off.
Yeah. Especially when the babysitters want between $10 and $15 an hour now.
Yeah.
And if you can find one. We haven't, they don't exist. Luckily, my 14-year-old, she's the babysitter now.
Yeah, but Todd, you may examine that cost benefit pretty carefully, because I suspect that's probably one of the more expensive babysitters that you could find.
You haven't been pricing a babysitter lately, Andy.
I haven't been pricing 14-year-old daughters either.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Okay.
So what exactly is the hourly rate for that?
Okay, we're not going to go there. All right, so let's go into the next article. Let's talk a little bit about Droid here. Google is cracking down on basically all the companies that are involved in getting the source code to Android in the early, you know, basically early releases. And they're saying playtime is over. Says over the last couple of months, Google, and this is directly from Business Week, carriers and device makers backing its mobility operating system have basically been cracking down on them and saying, "Hey, dudes, you're going to only get the, can't be making all these you know, these changes to the code, and you know, this is an open source project, and you know, you're not going to be able to." You know, play fun and games with this stuff, and they're trying to keep their partners in line, while at the same time, they're definitely playing favoritisms and who gets what when. It's not like you know, when Microsoft releases the OEM Windows 8, everybody got it at the same time. They are basically saying, okay, HTC or here Motorola or here so and so. You know, and they're kind of divvying out one by one. Is this going to be to the detriment of Android and how Google plays in the sandbox?
I mean, I tend to think it's just the opposite. I think this is the kind of stuff they've needed to do for a long time. Their platform has gotten really kind of out of control and going a lot of different directions, and it's hard for them to update and keep everything consistent. I think that's one advantage that the Windows Phone 7 platform has, as well as the iOS platform is that it's consistent across the handsets and that it's easier for updates to get pushed out too.
Andy, you're not a Droid user, but any thoughts?
Yeah, well, the thought is that, you know, one of the powerful things about the Apple experience is controlling the uniformity of the user experience, so that, you know, from an expectation standpoint, a consumer who's contemplating a particular device has their expectations pretty well bounded as far as, you know, what that will or will not be able to do. And I think one of the things that I kind of look at various Android devices and know just enough to ask, okay, which rev or which flavor are you talking about? And I think the general consumer populace could be, you know, set up to be very disappointed in the performance of some of these things. And this person has a, quote, Droid, where this other person has a Droid. But they're not on the same rev, and this app doesn't work over here, and this one seems to be, you know, superior, but not really. And that's not the sort of thing that you build a business on.
One thing that we've been doing is we have a Android app ready. And I talked with Angelo. We were going to launch it last week. And I said, Angelo, when's this thing going up on the marketplace? And I said, you know, we're ready to punch this thing out. And he's like, well, we had to go back. And he says, we got the Honeycomb. You know, the Honeycomb made some major changes, and we got to make the app so it's compatible with the Honeycomb build, and we need to do some fixes. So we're back doing a rev on the app that we haven't even released because they introduced some stuff in the new Honeycomb that doesn't make you backwards compatible. And if you don't have it, you can't be on it. So I'm like, oh my God, here we go again. So it's a constant development time. They haven't made it, I guess, they're making it easy, but you really got one shot at it. When you launch an app, that's it. You get public opinion pretty quick. And if you don't work across all screens, you're going to be in trouble. So anyway, I'm ranting. Let's move on. Let's talk about Photoshop. Did you guys hear about this iPad Live demo?
No, I haven't.
Oh, no, what you got?
You got to see this. When you see this, you're going to be this. You talk, Annie, it's only been a year, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me go ahead and bring up. This is an article. This is actually a video that was posted on photographybay.com. So giving credit where credit's due here. And here's the, this is the YouTube video.
What happens when you want to start taking some Photoshop capability and when you're in your train or commuting or out on a photo shoot and you actually want to start using the device to maybe do some things around organization or image manipulation, what are these new devices capable of? So what I want to show you here is a concept of some technology we're looking at. And this is, let's go pick an image here real quick. We'll start with this image. Of this fire here, and I'm going to do something. I'm going to come in and add a layer on top of that. This is the model before she was manipulated. I'm going to come through real quick and just show you the performance of this. It's something where you can come in and resize this, and it runs in a really nice time. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through and I'm going to pop a hole through this. So I'm going to actually erase here. Let me change the brush size is good. I'm going to come through and now erase on top of the untouched model with the one behind it that has the fire here. And just to show you what that looks like, I'm actually going to animate these layers and show you that.
What does layers actually look like to people who don't understand the concept? So when you're looking at someone who's trying to understand what's happening in Photoshop and how do layers work, this is a great kind of a tool to help them on that path. I just got a little more complex. I'm going to do something else. So I'm going to show you the layer stats. Look in the lower left-hand corner here. You'll see that you should bring up a little window that shows you where your layers are. I'm going to come in and add another layer. We'll add a gray layer on top of that. So you see the gray layer pops in. I will come in again. And we'll do something very simple here. Let's just erase her face to show the color coming through. Artist, but I will do my best here just to show the concept. And then again, as I go back in, and I animate those layers, now you see that third layer come through. And if you notice, if I do a last image undo, you can see that those actually appear in the layers in real time. So again, just a concept about how do we take technology that's been found in things like Lightroom and Photoshop and actually extend that out into these devices as they become more important to your workflows. So some great stuff there.
So there you go. You've got... let's see if I can get this thing. This their player is very weird on their site. Okay. They took the YouTube video, did something weird with it. But as you could see, as he was rotating the video, you could actually see the layers. You could see what you had done on each layer. And, I'm not a Photoshop guy, but I even understood that. And this was a demo. Yeah, this is not
finger painting.
Yeah, not ready for release yet, but just a demo. Finger painting?
That's what it reminded me of.
Well, I'm sure they're going to have, some stylist or something that'll come out with this. I can't imagine them not. But I was pretty impressed on the iPad, to be able to do that on the iPad. I thought it was pretty good.
Well, with a dual processor, it should be able to do that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I was great, entertaining demo. I'm not sure how useful a tool it might be.
Well, the reviews on people that got their hands on this say it's game changer. So, the professionals were pretty astounded. So no negative comments. Everyone says this will be something that they could use professionally. And that kind of blew me away. So, time will tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The, the acceleration of how our brains are functioning, someone was telling me about a young boy who was maybe 4 or 5 years old, came in and saw a traditional CRT. And he said, well, okay, there's the computer screen, but what's the box behind it? Why is there a box behind the computer screen? And so things that we have become very used to and our expectations that you can't have a graphic program without a stylus, without, you know, some fine motor skill input device, maybe that's not true. You know, and having your mind open to that possibility, I think, is something we have to work on.
If you guys haven't noticed today, Rob's been Andy, Andy's been Rob on these tiling tags when I bring them up. I'm still learning my new switcher. So, yeah, I think you're right, Andy. I think, the way my kids are, of course, I'm looking at my youngest and, you know, for him, his gaming system is definitely the iPad or the iPhone. He doesn't care about, you know, any of the other games so far. So they're saying, welcome back. Did we go somewhere for a little while? Were we off air? Or someone said in the chat, welcome back. There is a article over on CNET. Let's see if I can. Yeah, I thought I was going to be able to blow this up. And it talks about iPad 2 sales data and what they've actually, Amazon's been shipping. Let me see if I can bring this up. Can't see it real good. Basically, and I don't know if this is by thousands or if this is actual total numbers. If I explode this, it's going to get too big for this specific screen because I have to have a smaller screen. So, for example, they've been selling now the iPad for a little while, and they've shipped a number of units overseas at much higher than normal prices. And yeah, you can't see this very good. It's not going to work. But what I found to be pretty impressive was the number. They said that they were selling these things overseas by about an average of $400 to $500 over retail. And I didn't know that Apple would allow them to do that, but that's the case. They've been selling them in China, but some into Japan and places where the iPad hadn't launched yet, and getting more money for them. I guess that's, you know, obviously it's been a big market, big gray market for people standing in line and buying them and shipping them directly to China for that, you know, paying twice or three times as much. You know, have you ever seen a product have such a feeding frenzy on people wanting to pay? Do either of you remember a product that people would just about pay anything to get?
Well, Todd, I can say that that same type of environment is happening a little bit with the Nissan Leaf right now. I heard of a guy down in California that got offered $70,000 for his spot on the reservation list, you know, if he could get it here in the next month or so.
Well, why didn't you respond to that eBay response? If I had a leaf being delivered in the next month and someone was willing to pay me $70,000 for the vehicle, I'd be like, get your checkbook out, big boy. Let's make a deal. Cause you know, I don't know what is that car retail for?
It's about $34,000.
Oh yeah. That's a done deal. And for me, that's, you know, I'll wait 6 months for another vehicle because that pays for it.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point.
I'd be calling that guy up and say, are you serious? All right, send me $35,000 today and $35,000 upon delivery. Absolutely.
Actually, it's not a bad idea if I were to actually sell that and then take that money and then apply it to a Tesla S here that comes out in a year.
That's true.
That might be a better deal.
Yeah. That is a outstanding upward mobility progression path. That I think that would be good. But the Tesla S, you know, I've been reading more ever since you talked about it. I've been looking at that vehicle. Still, there's no way. No way I'd pay for that.
It's still too expensive, but it's a gorgeous car though, you have to say.
It is gorgeous, absolutely. All right. Let's talk about Amazon Cloud. You guys follow this at all?
Yeah, I follow it a little bit.
You know, what's funny about this is I'm looking here at my S3 map drive, and I've got 55 gigs of music sitting up on my Amazon S3 drive. Haven't been able to really kind of play it, but it's up there. I'm getting billed every month for the storage. So I'm thinking to myself, how do I write a script to get it from Amazon S3 over to the cloud? And yet Amazon's getting all kinds of pushback by the music industry, saying it needs all kind of digital music licenses. It's my music. I can do whatever I want. They're just providing a service for me to store it. It's no different than storage online. The only thing is they're giving us access to a player, right?
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to get shut down?
It shouldn't be a big deal, but it's going to be, of course, because everybody wants to control what everybody can do with their music. It seems like that the industry should have learned their lesson by now, you know. But I guess it still hasn't. So,
well, it's
some resistance to making this stuff freely available to however we want to get it, right?
You know, it's control, control, control. It's all about control. You know, it's because it's all about money. You know, that's what it really boils down to.
Yeah,
I can't remember the figure that was involved, but someone took and projected the consequential damages that the music industry was trying to get out of LimeWire, and it was something like $400 trillion.
Right.
I mean, it was just like the gross national product of the world for the last 2,000 years and 2,000 years in the future.
Yeah, the judge had actually said that the amount that they wanted to claim was, I don't know, she used the word insane, I think. Or you're simply ridiculous. She used a pretty strong language, the judge did, in saying, this is insane. And I think they're just being insane.
Well, you know, being in the music business right now, at least from an aggregator and distribution, is not a very profitable business right now. So it's a really difficult area for anybody to make money because the margins are so thin.
Well, here's what's changed everything. And our school, or my kids' school, requires my kids to have USB sticks. And they dictate what size of USB stick that they have to have. So these have to go with them to school every day. They bring their homework home, some homework on them. They have to can turn in papers to the teachers and so forth. With this, the teacher actually takes her homework off the stick. And why they're not using some online submission process, I don't know, but it's Hawaii. So the other day, my son tells me my stick's not working. And I'm like, okay, you know, let me see your stick. I stuck it in the machine and I opened it up. And lo and behold, I found a folder. And guess what that folder said on it? And I opened the folder up. And I'm like, where'd you get this? Oh, from my friends. So we had to have another discussion about, you know, copyright and sharing music. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why I buy the Zune Pass so that the kids can get all the music they want on their Zune. And so, you know, you can tell them and tell them and tell them, but the kids are bringing USB sticks to school. And what do you think they're going to do? They're going to share music, and you have that from a very young age. They're doing it in elementary school, where, you know, there's, you know, for you can expound all you want, but kids are going to be kids.
Yep. Hey, Todd, were those things donated to the school system by McAfee and Symantec? I mean, this is a virus transmission vector on steroids.
No, you had to buy your own.
Okay, so they said that you need to have at least a 4 gig, you know, stick or something that.
You have to have a stick, So, you know, I
can't believe their security people let them entertain that.
Well, we have a little bit of a process here we go through when they bring them home, too, for scanning if it's been in a machine. But, that's all the kids should have. It's in the list. It's actually school supply list. We'll have a USB memory card. So, you know, the schools are basically helping facilitate, I guess, for a better word. Hate to say it that way. Someone will get mad at me, but no, the kids are facilitating. And I just, you know, we had a discussion and it pained him when I deleted his selections off his card. And, you know, it is what it was. But, you know, when you're facing digital media that can sneakernet stuff faster than you could ever trade it on Napster, and a lot of kids having computers now, they're done. The music business is finished just because of the name of the game these days.
It's a very tough business. It's actually just really, I think, evolving into a service that, you know, it's out there. But it does kind of beg the question is, I mean, for content to be made, I mean, new content made, there needs to be revenue models around it that actually make money. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk about ad-supported music and that kind of stuff. That's never taken off. So it does kind of make you wonder what's going to happen.
Well, the artists are saying that they're making their money now on the concerts.
Yeah.
And
well, and t-shirts and other types of products. Yeah.
Now here's, you know, talking about ad supported stuff. The folks at Crackle, are you familiar with Crackle?
Yeah, it's owned by Sony, isn't it?
Yeah, Crackle has brought ad supported movies to Sony, TVs and Roku set top boxes. So basically what you do now is you load the Crackle channel on your Roku. They've got there are about 200 film titles available right now. And you have to, about every 10 minutes, they roll in a video. And this is something cool that that Roku hasn't announced yet. But now Roku has the ability to do pre-rolls and interstitial ads to be stuck in that's not built into the content. So this opens up all kinds of opportunities in that we can now drop an advertisement in front of a producer's content, have the ad run the content, and at a predetermined point, you use an ad server to bring in another advertisement. So this is what Crackle's doing, is they are ads basically supporting the movies through advertising.
Wow.
And this is huge from a development standpoint for the Roku device. It's been a big thing that we've been trying to crack is how do we make this work from a financial standpoint in building more and more apps and more channels supporting it. And this may be the way that we potentially go in the future, where you want to be on the device, you're going to have a pre-roll or interstitial in your content. So it is kind of a interesting move by Crackle. But they cracked the code there over at Roku, and now you're going to be able to watch movies ad-supported.
So, Todd, so do you remember that those guys were fairly good-sized podcasters back about 3 years ago?
I do not.
Yeah. They had a lot of, podcasts that they were pushing out.
What kind of content did they have?
It was more kind of serialized stuff. From the standpoint of like dramas and things like that.
Huh.
So it was like short form dramas.
I think they have some of that premium content too. So maybe this is their way of supporting the development of some of that content. So you just get on your Roku box and load the Crackle channel and check it out. Andy, did you get your interest there?
Yeah. Indeed, you did. We had I've had Crackle on the Roku here, and I think that this whole space is just moving so quickly, and you know, some very exciting stuff. And we've got just a lot of things that I think you and I need to have some conversations here.
Well, the code isn't built yet, so let's just be safe to say that. But I do have the pseudo code.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I was really glad to see the move forward by Roku in your local big box store there at Best Buy. I just hope that they get treated a little bit better than the Logitech box did with Google TV.
Yeah, I hope so too. And but again, that's something I had in my stack today. So Roku's coming to Best Buy, Fry's, and all the other big boxes. So that's good. Radio Shack, BJ's, whatever that is a store somewhere. BJ's Wholesale Club. So yeah, gee whiz, I'm sorry, everyone.
More boxes is a good thing.
Yes, and more in people's hands is a good thing, too. And the ability to tell your audience, go down to Best Buy and pick up a Roku box. That, or go to Roku.com and then when they're in Best Buy and they see the box, they go, oh, yeah, Andy talked about that, or Todd talked about that. Maybe I should pick one of these up for $99.
Yeah, I saw it in the Fry store here in the Seattle area about 2 weeks ago, actually.
So how did they have it displayed?
It was sitting right next to other kind of TV and web camera type of devices.
They have it hooked up to anything?
I did not see it demoed. It just had the boxes on the shelf.
Yeah, I think it's in order to really, they need to have it there where people can press the mouse. I'm hoping that they would get to that point. You know, they have whole areas dedicated to the Google TV. Of course, Google demands a little more, you know, Sony and all those other players can use their channel power. But, you know, that's something that was interesting, too. You know, they said for a while that they're going to release the Google API in the spring. It is spring. We have heard nothing about Google TV in months. Has Google TV went the way of the dinosaur or what?
I hope it hasn't gone to where Google Wave went to.
No, I'm sure that they're still working on it. It's just that they're probably in between rev cycles right now.
Well, I wish they would release the API so that we can start developing to it. Still think it's going to be a big market. I don't know. But the Google TV might be the next thing that is bigger than, or not the Google TV, the Android TV, because we saw a bunch of those at CES.
Indeed,
let's talk just a bit about Windows 8. Microsoft has begun distribution Windows 8 to OEMs via Kinect. So this is really kind of the first step, isn't it, Rob, to release when Windows 8 go to the OEMs?
Yeah, the company usually goes through this phase where there's, you know, this huge kind of beta program that, that happens out there. And I think that's going to launch here soon, but I'm not exactly sure what the date is on all that.
And it looks to me like they're trying to keep up with the Joneses. And I think they already announced this last year where they're going to go to a faster release schedule. So did they say it was going to be the fall or something, right? When Windows 8 was going to be available sometime this year, right?
Oh, as far as the beta of it?
No, when they're actually going to be ready for resale.
Oh, I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, I thought I had heard sometime this year. Andy, do you remember what date it was?
No, I really, really don't. But some of the authorized developers, it was pushed out here recently, right?
Yeah. Well, it went to all the OEMs. So, mm-hmm. So anyway, that's that on that. All right, next thing up, Gmail is rolling out a new service, which we should all wonder if we should like or hate. They're going to be learning from our inbox and displaying us better ads. How's that make you feel?
I'm really
excited. I don't know. I have a blind spot on that side of the page anyway.
It's really exciting. More ads.
You have a blind spot on that side of the page?
Yeah. I'm in Gmail, almost all day, and I know there's stuff that's happening over there, but I'm not paying any attention.
That's the same thing that happened to banner ads too, right? Everybody kind of just they don't even see them anymore. It just they just disappeared from most users' kind of view of what they're looking at.
It's true that we become blind to banner ads, but the question is, how come they're still banning such a huge portion of the advertising industry's Are they still making money on? I guess they're still making money on banner ads, or they wouldn't be spending money in the space, would they?
Well, it's they're getting paid from ad impressions, which is really more around branding, right?
Yeah, I guess. But again, I hate to say it, but I don't remember the last time I clicked on a banner ad.
Yeah,
I just don't.
I don't either.
Well, it is what it is, but it is interesting. They're reading our emails and giving us better ads according to what's in our inbox.
I don't think that's going to be very effective either.
I don't think it's going to be very popular from a privacy standpoint either.
Yeah.
Of course, they already know everything about us there is to know anyway, so I guess what's a little more? This New York Times paywall has gotten some conversation. I think I've actually talked with the guys they had on the show last week. But, you know, they spent I just want to get your guys' perspective. They spent $40 million on the new design of the New York Times paywall. Do you guys have any idea where they spent all that money?
It sounds like they got ripped off.
I want to be on that contract.
Yeah.
How do you get a deal like that, Andy? What kind of
I don't know. I think, what was my number? 140, 160? How many days it would last?
Yeah, but $40 million to build it.
Yeah, Todd, wasn't there a news article that came out saying that wall got cracked within like 5 days or something?
No, it's like hours.
Hours.
It was just hours. But, you know, it's like a government contract. You know, you hear about these government contracts where it's $800 for a toilet seat or $1,500 for a crescent wrench. And then you hear about $40 million for a website. Of course, you know, it's on par with what the president bought on that. They launched all those supposed transparency sites, which are now going to be removed because of budget cuts. And so all this money just, you know, they're flushing this cash. You know, I have some advice for the New York Times. If they want to really make an impact, you know, they just throw $1 million my way and we'll drive them some traffic. Oh, gosh. Hey, Netflix.
Well, Todd,
go ahead.
I mean, for $1 million, I mean, that's like donating your services. It's a philanthropic effort, right?
That's right. For $1 million, I guarantee we'll increase the New York Times subscription to make it worth every penny. You know, we'll give them ROI 9 or 10 times over. Make that money, keep their reporters on the payroll for a few more weeks. Hey, Netflix Canada announced the new bandwidth management settings for capped users. And what they've done within the Netflix account for Canadian users, that they have a choice to go to best quality, where they get up to a gig per hour, all the way down to good quality, where they can throttle their video connection to 0.3 gigs per hour. You know, this has got to be a sad day for the folks at Netflix to have to do this.
Yeah, I think those guys are getting pretty big, and I think the Hollywood industry is going to start getting a little nervous of one player like that having so much power. And I mean, I know that's not exactly the topic here, but I think that there's going to be some rough road ahead for Netflix, I think.
Andy, any thought?
Yeah, well, it comes right back to the channel control that we talked about earlier in the entertainment business, because that whole model has been that's existed for 80 years is being challenged and changed.
Now, I was reading through, you know, some of the trades, and there was definitely, you know, there's obviously what's going on is they're now going to be held hostage to new contract demands, and it's probably not going to end well, and probably subscription prices will have to go up, or Netflix will have to scale back some of the stuff that they're doing. They may not be as much of a darling to Wall Street as they have been, but, you know, I don't see how they can put the genie back in the bottle. It's one of these things, again, they've offered, it's available. People are going to scream, holler, bloody murder if that's not, if they can't get access to stuff. Am I 21-year-old daughter, if she didn't have Netflix, she'd be, it's going to be impact. Or if she doesn't have all the movies available that's been available on Netflix, and she's not going to be a happy camper at all. And her form of TV is, the internet, not that Bloob Tube that you pay $100 a month to the cable providers every month. So, I don't know.
Well, Todd, I think over the next couple of years, I think where we're really going to see a lot of changes in this model. I mean, if you look at what's happening with Netflix and kind of this online platforms, who does it threaten the most? It threatens the cable companies, right?
Yep.
So the impression that I'm getting is that I think that those companies are feeling the heat now, and I think that they're starting to realize that they need to start supporting this stuff more on their end. And unfortunately, those guys have a lot of power with the content providers and the studios. So I think here over the next year or so, you're going to see a lot of changes from those type, the Time Warners. I think we kind of glanced over that a little bit earlier in the show. But I think that we're going to see those guys start to make some big moves, Comcast and the Time Warner folks and whatever, to make it possible for us to do more of this streaming to different devices and to have it available, to have cable available on different types of devices too. So I think that that's the big trend. And I know that, Google and Microsoft and all these companies and Apple are trying to dominate that space right now and trying to move into it and take it away. But I think in the bigger picture of things, who owns it now? It's the cable companies. And all they have to do is start doing the right thing here. And I think they're going to capture a big chunk of what's going to happen out there.
And they have huge pocketbooks and huge lobbying power. And yeah. I don't put anything beyond them and their capability to do it. All right, yeah. Last article I've got for you guys today, and this is one that we should put our conspiracy hats on a little bit. It's a good article over in the Wall Street Journal. And here's the title. U.S. products help block Mideast web. And basically, the quick summary of this is, as Middle East regimes try to stifle dissent by censoring the internet, the U.S. faces an uncomfortable reality in that American companies provide much of the technology used to block websites. So, I had a conversation with someone the other day, and they said this could happen in the United States. People are getting upset, and with all the tax situation and with the whole political sphere, and everything's heating up. And as soon as people start rioting in the streets in the United States, someone's going to pull the plug and shut the internet down here too. And I basically said there's no way that would happen. There would be chaos. So they've done it in the Middle East. So let's conspiracy theory here a little bit. Could this, or will this, or can this, can they pull the plug on us here?
Oh, I think that they probably have that capability already, would be my guess.
You have capability, but having to, but the capability is one thing, but doing it is another. Would they do it?
I can't imagine with the financial impact of that. I would say it would be technically possible, but the disruption to the economy would almost a madman scenario.
Yeah,
the way I look at it.
Yeah, Rob, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm hearing some discussion online about the whole possibility that the economy could come into a period of time here over the next couple of years where we could see a significant collapse, and it's based on the U.S. dollar being the world currency. There's a lot of rumors that could change over the next couple of years, and if that happens, this economy here in the U.S. will not. We'll go through a very bumpy transition period because we won't be able to just print money to get ourselves out of our financial mess. And I just hear talk, that we could come up pretty bumpy period of time here where there's a significant economic collapse that makes what happened to us back in 08 and 09 kind of pale in comparison.
Well, and if you look at a couple of factors, this past week, the price of corn is up nearly 50% on future buys. So what does that equal? So if we think about that, that means we're going to see inflation in the grocery store with almost every product that we eat. Now, combined with the high debt, there was an experience I had many years ago. I was in Thailand, and I was talking with an individual that was had crossed over from Laos and was actually there. I don't know what they were doing, but long story short, I was talking about Laos and the money in Laos. And he said if he took Lao money to the grocery or to a market to buy something, he would literally need a huge burlap bag. Just, you know, a big burlap bag completely filled of Lao money in order to pay for just basic groceries. Just because the inflation was so much that he would, you know, where you would go in and spend $10 for a American, you'd spend $10 American for something. You would need like 100 million allow whatever the currency, whether it was bought or whatever it was, you would need this huge denomination. And what the result was, it was because the government had printed so much money that quite literally you could figuratively use the paper for toilet paper. And so if we are in that situation now where we're continuing to print money out of control, prices are going up incrementally, people don't realize that we're in big trouble. At least I think we are. And that's getting way beyond the tech side, but
I think that there's a big risk here over the next few years that we could come into a period of time of hyperinflation, which would just wreak havoc with our economy. And I totally agree with you, Todd. It's pretty scary, you know, when you think about the huge deficits that the U.S. government has. And how people are overseas are going to start losing faith in investing in government bonds, which is what's been propping up our economy for a long time.
What do you hear, Andy, at your commerce meetings?
I'm just looking for the reference. I heard about this. Hold on. The book that I'm talking about is called Endgame.
Oh yeah.
Into the debt super cycle and how it changes everything. I've just I pulled the sample onto my iPad to begin reading this thing, and I think I'm going to push the button and end up buying this thing. It looks quite interesting, quite scary.
Is it is it available on Audible?
I don't know. I'll have to slip over there and see if that is available there.
So is it Alex Jones Endgame? Is that the one that you're talking about?
It is John Maldin, Mauldin.
Okay.
And Jonathan Tepper, Tepper.
Okay, Endgame.
You guys ever listen to the Alex Jones Show? It's a podcast.
Have not.
That, you should go check it out sometime.
Is he down the middle, or is he a righty or lefty, or where does he fall out on the?
I'd say he's right down the middle. I mean,
that's good.
Yeah, I've been listening to him for a couple of weeks now, and he bashes both sides of the fence.
Yeah, you know, I just probably don't want to talk politics on the tech show, but we need to fire all of them. You know, they can't. Yeah. Jeez, it's ridiculous.
There's a lot of stuff that's being kept from us from our media is only reading from press releases these days.
Yeah, for sure. So Andy, I know you go to chamber meetings. I'm sure that's a topic of discussion, isn't it? To a certain extent.
It certainly is. And I think looking at some of the portions or some of the table of content things here, just talks about various economies around the world and as they would say, unintended consequences of monetary policy and all sorts of things. Kind of beyond the scope of what we need here. I need to leave out of here.
Okay.
As I had mentioned earlier, but all right. Enjoyed having a chance to join you guys today.
And I guess I'll wrap it up at this point then. And Rob, if you want to hang out for a few minutes afterwards, good. Everyone that's been watching, we've been watching the Morning Tech Show. Of course, we got a little off track here at the very end. But I want to appreciate everyone for hanging out with us for the past 90 minutes or so. And we'll be back here with you again next Saturday for another Morning Tech Show. And I want to thank Andy McCaskey from SDR News and, more importantly, RVNN.TV. And, of course, Rob Greenlee. You can find Rob at webcastradio.com. Right, Rob?
Web Talk Radio.
Oh, Web Talk Radio. Okay. Jeez.
Or robgreenlee.com too.
Yeah. I went over that website. You need to blog more often.
I do. You're exactly right. I do.
So, gentlemen, have a great week. And everyone that's been hanging out, geeknews@gmail.com or the voicemail hotline 616.